this is off the radar that you probably never heard of because it's not Thomas River Brown or this or that. And I'm a big Thomas River Brown fan, but I've tried his wines. I've tried what we're going to try tonight, the collection series, all of it, the Pinot, and I'm excited for you guys to try it. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Jason.
Wow.
Great. Great.
I can't wait to explode in your mouths.
Pete will take that.
I said that for a reason. These guys will take that and run.
Not really.
Thank you, Tim, for the great intro. You should travel with me so like we can just do this all the time. So yeah, my story is a little bit different than most in Napa, and not that there's anything wrong with the common story that you hear, because there's nothing wrong with it. You know? A lot of money flows into Napa Valley, and my story is just kind of like the opposite of the traditional story, and I think that makes it a little bit unique. But yeah, as Tim was saying, like, I'm born and raised in Dallas, Texas. I kind of found my love for wine through working in fine dining restaurants when I was a teenager. So lucky for me, I had sommeliers and restaurant managers that saw that I was interested in wines, and they really just exposed me to and let me taste wines that, frankly, I probably would have never tasted without that kind of access, that kind of experience or whatever. So I was drinking like first growth Bordeaux, grower champagne, Napa Cold Cabs from like my teenage years on, and that just really kind of facilitated the transition from that interest in wine to the love and the passion for it. So I'm 21 years old, I got my real estate license, did that for about a year, and after about a year, my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, was like, look, she said, look, it's pretty obvious, you're doing real estate. But it's also pretty obvious that you suck at that. So, like, we should probably figure out what you're actually good at, what you're passionate about, so that we can create something that you can, put your heart and soul into. And we kicked around some ideas, and she's like, well, how about wine? So, you've always loved wine. Is there something there? And I was literally just like, holy shit, that was the fucking light bulb moment where I was like, I want to be a winemaker. And of course, that's a very lofty aspiration for a kid from Dallas with no roots in the industry, no family out there to help, and no money to do it with. We're extremely, very much a blue-collar family. We didn't come, my dad was a carpenter his entire career, very much a tradesman. So 6 months later, we had, my wife and I had basically a three-week-long garage sale, sold everything we owned, and moved to California to pursue the dream. And definitely, Not something that would be advisable to most people, but I was just in the mindset that there was just nothing that was going to stop me from at least trying, so yeah. We did it. Moved out to Davis for me to go to UC Davis for their winemaking school there. And after about I'd say 4 or 5, 6 months of me living in Davis and talking to students that were in the program, I actually decided that Davis was actually not a good fit for me personally because it was way too theory-based for my learning style. I think I'm a lot like my father in terms of like him being a tradesman. So for me, like drawing molecules, wearing a lab coat, doing research projects, would have been a total waste of my time. Like it just would have been a waste of my time. So I ended up continuing waiting tables in Dallas. I'm sorry, in Napa while I was getting this whole thing going. And me and the boys, we'd go out and do wine tastings together at the restaurant. We went to this one place, long story short, the guy was like, listen, I know you want to be a winemaker. That old man I just overheard has a vineyard. He's got a vineyard. You ask him. Maybe he wants to, maybe you can get some fruit from him that he doesn't want. Who knows? All you can do is say no, right? So I was like, yeah, absolutely. So I gathered my courage, went and asked the guy, listen, I'm studying to be a winemaker. You have a vineyard. You think I can come to your vineyard, I'd be happy to pick any fruit you don't want. I'll pick it myself, take it to my apartment in Davis, throw it in my closet. I was like, I don't care how good or bad the fruit is, I should go through the process of making wine. And he looked at me and goes, I'll tell you what, kid, because I was 24 years old at this time. He goes, I'll tell you what, I bought this property as an investment property for the house. It came with a vineyard. I have no clue what to do with this fruit. So if you want it, You know, that shit's probably gonna rot in the vine if somebody doesn't do something with it. So if you want it, you can have the whole thing. The whole vintage is all yours. I'll give you the whole thing. You can do it wherever you want. You don't have to do it in my closet. I have a 3-car garage. You can use that. I'll buy you everything you need to make the wine to make the wine. So, I mean, honestly, think about that. A guy offered to give me his fruit, give it to me, and pay for everything to make it. Like, that shit does not happen, especially in that valley. So,
and what year was this?
2002.
2002.
So I was very fortunate to meet this guy. And that garage, and me making wine as a garage, ended up being my classroom. And it was, for me, the best classroom I could have ever asked for or ever wished for, because there was no one over my shoulder telling me what to do and when. I basically had to kind of, you know, figure things out on my own. And whenever I had questions about what I was doing, theories I needed to test, problems with fermentation I needed to fix, I would email all these different winemaking mentors I befriended and ask them all the same exact question. And knowing that the exact same question went out to all these different people, when the answers came back, seeing that no two answers were the same, that to me was like, holy shit, like, wow. If you ask, and it kind of came to this realization, if you ask 100 different winemakers, how do you make wine? Through this interaction, I realized you can easily get 200 different answers. 100 questions, 200 different answers. There's more than one right way to do things we do in winemaking, is the point I'm trying to make here. So, you know, in my opinion, winemaking is an art form supported by science. So I feel like I was kind of like taking the best bits of knowledge from all these different winemaking mentors I befriended through these questions, and I was creating my own method of operation. People always ask, how'd you come up with the name for modus operandi? Modus operandi is Latin for method of operation. So for me, I was kind of taking the best bits of knowledge from these people, creating my own method of operation of how I'd make my lines going forward, and just doing that. So yeah, starting the company officially in 2004 when I was 26 years old. We made 8 barrels of Cabernet, and this is like not in the garage thing. We actually made it in a real winery and bought real fruit and all that stuff. So we made 200 cases, 8 barrels of Cab, way back in 04. And today, this is my 19th year producing wine this year. So we're almost 20 years of making wine. And we've just been kind of quietly and slowly growing our brand for the last almost 20 years now. And we've had wines poured at the White House for steak dinners. We've had wines poured with, like, you know we've had our wines written in Michael Connelly novels. Our scores for the major critics have been pretty positive, I'd say. I don't usually
be modest
talking about that too much, but yeah, pretty good. And, you know, honestly, the thing that means the most to me is, like, the fact that I can reach out to one of my clients and they will take time out of their day, of their life, to put something like this together. So I want to thank Tim. Thank you very much.
Pretty good.
For putting this together, for, you know, thinking enough of me to, like, host. And
cheers, bro. Cheers,
yeah,
cheers.
It's super cool, man.
Cheers, Jimmy.
Like,
cheers.
Nothing else matters if you don't have people that enjoy your product. And I think that, I don't know.
Burnsy.
I'm a very conceptual guy. So here's one thing I want to say to everyone at this table tonight. If you've ever had any question about winemaking, grape growing, the business of owning a winery, because I fucking do it all. Literally, I run the whole business myself. I have like one or two employees. That's about it. And so yeah, if you have any questions throughout this evening, shoot them out. What's going on in Napa? What's up with the fires? Blah blah blah. Anything you want to know? Like, I'm happy to, you know, talk about it.
Two questions.
Yes, sir, go for it.
First question is, the garage you started to work in, do we know who that man was or his family was?
Yeah, his name was Tom Thompson. He owned like 20 Carl's Jr. restaurants in the Bay Area.
He got good burgers.
And so, like, he had plenty of money, and he didn't, it was an investment profit for him, so he didn't care.
Okay, so he doesn't make wine?
No. And originally, like, when I first was, you know, starting the company, founding the business, I was going to use that vineyard as like my first vineyard, but as I learned more about grape growing and all that stuff, I realized like this vineyard sucks. It's not good enough for like production. And I mentioned this earlier today in a different conversation. The fact that that vineyard sucked was good for me, because imagine if Andy Backstopper was like, "Hey Jay, I know you want to learn how to make wine. Here's a ton of Coquelin Cab. Practice with this." Yeah. Imagine that. Like, it would be too easy. Like, that wine just makes itself, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Essentially.
Yeah.
So this challenging vineyard that had all kinds of weird fucking issues or whatever, I made wine with that, and it created all these issues in the fermentation and the finished wine that I had to figure out. So that was by far a better learning experience for me than just having some layup, easy, fucking perfect Cabernet vineyard to practice on. It was fantastic. So,
what happened to all those bottles of Cabernet that you produced?
He drank like all of them. I'm not kidding. Like they weren't great. They were fine, but they weren't like awesome.
Was it Napa or Sonoma?
It was Napa. Yeah. Right in Coombsville.
Yeah. Well, Goldie, you have another question, or I do?
Where's Boccia Galuppi's in Sonoma?
Oh, what is Sonoma? Adobe Russian Road?
River. They made great Chardonnay.
No, I know. I just didn't know where the vineyard is.
So my question is, now that, and thank you for that, and awesome, and let me tell you, he is a wealth of knowledge. If you ever want to know what's going on in Napa, this guy will tell you. He's straight shooter. Tell us about the rosé that we're drinking.
So
it's very good. It's delicious.
Thank you. 2021 single vineyard rosé. This is not a Saunier. This is literally like a direct press. This is a pick for rosé. So the chemistry at the picking date is so specific for rosé. There's two ways you can do it. You can pick for red wine and then bleed the tank and make rosé, and that's fine. I do that too. This particular one is our like higher end, so it's actually grown and picked specifically for the chemistry of white wine. The Pinot Noir grapes are sent directly to the press, just like white wine is being produced. And it's just a single vineyard, Boccia Galuppi vineyard. Rosé Pinot Noir from 2021. I started doing this in 2020 when the fires were like a big problem, potentially. I spoke to Pam Boccia Galuppi, the matriarch of the vineyard here, and I asked her, I said, "Hey, do you have crop insurance?" Which is basically like, can I not pick your fruit this year? And she promptly replied, "No, we do not." And I was like, okay. Okay, so I believe in like taking care of your producer or your suppliers, right? So I could have easily said, "Well, the fires are raging, and I don't have to harvest your fruit. I can just say you can go fuck yourself, and I'm not going to pay you money." But I didn't do that. I didn't do it because I knew that, like, if I did that, I'd be screwing over their family. So I said, "How about this? Let's hedge our bets. I will do half of this production as rosé, because when you take fruit, even if it's been exposed to smoke, if you press it off directly and don't do skin contact, your chances of having a smoke tainted wine are drastically reduced." So I was like, "Okay, well, let's do half. I'll do half as direct press rosé, and I'll do the other half as Pinot Noir, like traditional red wine. And you'll get paid, and I'll still have wine. It's great." So we did it, and it turned out, shit, one of the best freaking rosés I've ever made in my life. I stopped making rosé for a long time. My wife, after a certain period of time, was like, "Why the fuck are you not making rosé?" She literally slapped me in the back of the head. She's like, "Don't you know? There's all these, like, hashtag rosé all day. Like, people are big time. They love rosé." So I was like, "I don't want to make rosé." She said, "Do it, you moron."
Yeah.
So I did it, and guess what? We sell out of this shit. This is the only vintage we haven't sold out on release, because I literally quadrupled the production of it. Usually, we sell out before it's even bottled, just rosé. And I don't know if you saw, but like the package is fucking sweet. We use the glass cork, and it's a rose, rose-colored tinted glass. So you can kind of see it there. So that sound actually kind of was just, I mean, I couldn't be happier with the package. It's wonderful. But anyway. Yeah, dude, I mean, it's just a good ass one.
How long does it cheers. Stay on the skins?
No, it goes, the whole cluster goes directly to the press. It just gets pressed. So there's no skin contact at all.
Okay.
I mean, that's how we get this light color that we do. There's no modification of color here at all. This is completely natural. Exactly how it comes out.
Beautiful. So what Carl's menu? What Carl's Jr. menu?
You can get the thing.
They have a little.
I've seen at Carl's Jr. and I don't
know, and that's it.
Shit, probably 10 years. I don't even know.
I imagine the original batch.
Really great conversation with Jason of Modus Operandi Cellars. His wines are fantastic. And we will continue this conversation at a later time. Cheers.